Hello and welcome to In The Frame. Today's guests are Noah Thomas and Heba El-Sheikh, who are currently playing Jamie and Pretty in the West End production of Everybody's Talking About Jamie at the Apollo Theatre. Coincidentally, both Noah and Heba have the same path into the industry, training at both the Brit School and then Mountview. They're playing best friends on stage, and since meeting a couple of months ago, they are fast becoming best friends off stage too. Jamie marks Noah's professional debut, whilst Heba's credits include playing the title role in Brooklyn the Musical. She was in Fiverr at the Southwark Playhouse, she did Antony and Cleopatra at the National Theatre, and starred as Princess Jasmine in the Australian production of Aladdin. I recently sat down with Noah and Heba backstage at the Apollo Theatre in Noah's dressing room. We talked about everything from being cast in the show to the hardest moments to sing and the score and why audiences respond so hugely to their characters. This was the easiest interview I've ever done. I literally didn't have to do anything. I just sat back and let Noah and Heba talk. They were both amazing and it was such a pleasure. Here's the interview. Noah and Heba, you are in the frame.
Yeah.
Love it, babe.
This is my first
ever kind of three-person interview.
Oh, that's exciting.
Wow. special.
I mean, I was saying, like, you guys have both had like the same kind of training journey. You're both Brit School graduates, went on to Mountview.
Yes.
Then here you are in the glittering West End.
I know.
I use the word graduate lightly because I'm not a graduate. So I don't want to plagiarize myself as a graduate yet. But no, we're both Brit and Mountview.
Future alumni?
Almost. Almost
alumni. Almost alumni.
But no, yeah, we are from the same roots.
Yeah.
In that sense, yes.
So let's talk about this little show that you're doing. Everybody's talking about Jamie.
This upcoming play.
That's kind of some people have heard about and like a little bit, right?
Yeah, just a tad.
Taking over the West End and soon the world, kind of the UK as well. So when did you guys first hear about it? When did it first come onto your radar? Like, when did you hear the music? When did you hear that it was happening?
Well, I heard about it when it was workshopping in Sheffield because I had a couple of friends who did the workshops.
Cool.
So I'd kind of heard about it through then.
Yeah.
And then when it got its West End transfer, one of my best friends was in the cast.
Who's that?
Luke Bayer. And he was a swing and he understudied Jamie. Mm-hmm. But I was away when it first opened in the West End, so I didn't actually get to see it like for a while, but I'd heard the music because he made me download all the cast album.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this looks really cool and like sounds really, really cool. And I'd watched the documentary before, not knowing like the connection between the two. And then finally I got a chance to watch it when I came back and I was blown away. I cried so much. Like, I just thought the show was incredible and I'd never seen anything like it before. And for me, it was just to see myself represented on stage like that was incredible. And I felt like everyone that I knew that watched the show, regardless of where they're from, who they were, their connection to theatre, really saw themselves represented on that stage. And like, it took me ages to kind of recover from, and I don't think I have recovered from it, to be honest. Like,
it's an ongoing recovery.
Yeah, honestly, even being a part of it now, I'm like, wow, what an amazing story to tell and to be a part of. And
we like to see it.
Yeah, and so I think, I think that was kind of my journey with
it. And straight away, like that night when you saw it, were you kind of like, oh, I want to do this. This is a kind of role for me.
Do you know what? I really, like, watching it, I just admired it at first. And I wasn't necessarily like, oh, I need to be a part of it. I just thought, wow, what an incredible show this is. And what a amazing, you know, story that's being told.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, luckily enough, the show's been running for a while now. And, you know, for us to get to be a part of telling this story. I think when I knew that the opportunity would come about for me to audition for this role, of course I was absolutely like, please let me give it a go and like tell this story. It means so much to me and I would love to you know, be that person for someone else. Like, you know, Lucy was for me when I watched the show and Sabrina was as well when, you know, she played the role. So I think getting to be a part of telling this story on stage, as soon as the audition came up, I was like, please, let me audition.
Come
so
on.
I'm
yeah.
sure you
well, yeah, sort of.
Done.
I first saw it My dad is a massive theatre head and like just goes to see everything under the sun. And so it's like my whole, and like, not that, you know, we're like rolling in money. Like, it's like literally like 15 quid tickets to everything, which I love. But like he was, it was maybe when the show was in previews in town. I'd never heard of it before. So it was in previews here. And my dad was like, I've got tickets to this thing. And I was like, what? And he was like, well, he's like, I think it's a musical. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but it's called Everybody's Talking About It. I think it's a musical. It might just be a play. I'm not sure. Came and saw it. And I was like, what is this? Whoa. Wow. Come on. Cause it was like pop music, Kate Prince. Like when I saw it, I didn't know that. And then I Googled it afterwards and I was like, of course it was Kate Prince. Like I was just obsessed, and the book was so strong and everything. And then I saw it again like a few months later when they'd like opened and it was sort of more settled, and I was like, they're in their stride now. And then I kind of left it alone for what, a year and a half before I ever came into contact with it again. And still in my third year at Mount View, I auditioning for anything was never in my, that's not in my frame of mind. It just wasn't a thing. And so when the chance came around to audition for it, even when I saw the show, it wasn't a role that I was ever like, I'd love to do that, because I don't know, dream roles aren't really something I envision for myself, because I just think setting my expectations too high to something, it will just crash my dreams eventually. So I never wanted to set my expectation or my goals to that kind of level. But when the audition came around, I was buzzing, and I had about 6 days, watched a documentary, learned all the music, like the scenes I had to learn, banged out that soundtrack like nobody's business in the shower, like just kept it going. And then when I got it, I was a bit like,
what happened? How did you get it?
So so you know how people either say, like, when you audition, you either have one audition that's like 5 minutes long and then you get it, or you audition for like 6 years. I had two auditions. So I did the first one for a few of the creatives and Nika Burns, producer.
Yeah.
Did that first audition. And then I went away because I was doing a third year show in the evening. So I went away from that audition. Did the show.
Which I watched him in, not knowing
that would happen. Oh my God. That's
what was the show? What was the show?
Guys and Dolls. And I was playing Nicely, which is hilarious.
He was like, who's that guy?
I told him this after we found out that we were both doing it. I watched him in the show and I thought, he's an absolute star. And genuinely, me and my friend Paul, who I'd gone to see the show with, were both like, this guy is something special. And later on, when I found out he'd gotten Jamie and we'd met up for a coffee, I was like, I watched you in Guys and Dolls. And
oh no, what you told me was that you watched it and you went, Paul, we're going to be best friends.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to be best friends with him. But this was before we were actually playing best friends. Yeah. And like, I was like, I'm going to be best friends with him.
Hilarious.
I was like, there's something about him. And we didn't know that we'd both gone to Brit or Mount View. I just was like, he is amazing.
Yeah.
This is a little bit ridiculous.
I know.
It's very weird and very like, yeah. But so that's the thing. When I was auditioning for it, I just would never have imagined. And so then I did that audition, went back to college. We had a photo shoot for the show. Finished that photo shoot at like, 3 o'clock? And they were like, you've got a recall. I was like, oh, cool, amazing. Yay, brill. Because in my head, I was just like, this is experience. Like, auditioning for like a West End show, a West End lead, a producer. Amazing, brill. Came back the next day. Jonathan, the director, was here. Dan G. Sales was here as well, who obviously wrote the fantastic music. Mm. And it sort of workshopped it with them. And in hindsight now, something about that second audition was different. I was like, they're really like going into detail with me, and they're really like asking a lot of me, and they're really like giving me a lot of information that I don't think you would get in a lot of auditions. So I finished it, left the room, went up the stairs of the theatre, like out of the stall, it was in the stalls bar, left the theatre, and then I feel a tap on my shoulder and I was like, who's the, like murder, like I thought someone was gonna kill me. And then like it was the associate director George, and he pulled me back. He was like, just come back in the room. He was like, just before you come in, nothing bad, all good, it's all good, just want to talk to you. And I came back in the room and Jonathan was like, just a quick question, would you like to play Jamie? And I just sort of went, you what? You're sorry, what? And he was like, would you like to? And I was like, can I sit down? Can I just have a seat? And then I've got all of them just talking to me, and I'm like, I promise I'm listening, I promise I am, but I this w- w- What? It was the most mental day in the world. And then I had to go back, do the show in the evening, and wasn't allowed to tell anyone. So I was just like...
Did you secretly tell someone? You must have had to.
I called my mum, who didn't answer the phone 3 times.
No.
Called my sister, who didn't answer the phone. No. Called my dad, who didn't answer the phone. And so then I called my best friend Zach. I called him up, and I was like, I don't cry at anything, but I was in absolute bits, walking down Shaftesbury Avenue like a nutter, and I was like crying my eyes out. And he was like, "Are you okay? You okay?" And I was like, "Yeah. Are you on your own?" Because I knew he can tell. And I was like, "You on your own?" And he was like, "Yeah, cool." And I was like, I got it. And he was like, "Got what?" And he was like, "Oh, Jamie." And I was like, "Yeah." And so walked from Shaftesbury Avenue to Vauxhall. Asked me why I did that. Don't know. But my mum was there. And then my mum was like, "Oh, well done. So you got the cover. Well done. That's brilliant." And I'm like, "No, mum, I didn't get the cover. I got the role." And she was like, "What?" And my parents didn't know what to say. It was the weirdest thing in the world. Because it's just that thing of like, you like what I nothing I expected. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that to happen at all. So yeah, it's a funny old story. And yeah, when I had to keep that secret for like a month, it was.
And then like your year at Melt, you must have gone wild when they found
all,
out.
Well, I told them just before our last show, and they all started crying and went crazy and mental. And they've all been so lovely and supportive. So yeah, it's been a lovely. Sort of time, because it's sort of, I don't know, our year is quite close knit, and whenever we see anyone succeed, we're all very supportive. So I knew that like if anyone's got my back, it's those guys, and I miss them a lot. But
they all came to our first show.
Are they like, your first one?
Our very first show, there was like, I want to say 40 Mountview students in the audience.
Them, yeah.
And they Mountview all went stage door and like
all bought mugs with my face
in it
as well.
It was really cute.
I was like, guys, overboard.
We could tell the Mountview people were in
there. Yeah, they're so brilliant. They're so great. And yeah, I go back and see them every now and when I can. You know, I've been to see their shows that they're doing, and they're all just smashing it, and they're all so talented, and I'm proud to be part of that year. But yeah, I don't know. I think the thing I always say was that when I was in third year, like doing the shows, I was very comfortable and very happy. And then it wasn't until I left that I was like, oh, I was ready to leave, and I was ready to progress to something further. Mm-hmm. And that just happens to be this, which I'm very grateful for.
So then when you launch into rehearsals, what I love about Jamie is how I've seen each of the different casts, and everyone's brought their own flavour to it, and they've done their own things with it. Which I think is why it still feels fresh and why it's still able to speak to people so profoundly. So what was that rehearsal process like? How much kind of freedom were you given?
All the freedom in the world, which is, you know, like obviously it's my first job, but obviously this one here is like, she's been booked and blessed since she left drama school. And so she's just told me all the stories about how like, that's not the case for every show. It's not. And because there are certain things, you've got, you know, your Les Mis's and your Wickeds, like it's not a bad thing, but they're machines and they work. And so that's the way the show is. But the first, I had a 2 week like prior rehearsal period just on my own, just workshopping with different people. Like we had a session, I had a session with Melissa and Sejal, who play Margaret and Ray. I had a session with Roy on my own as well, who's obviously playing Hugo in the show right now. And it was not the thing of, well, Leighton did this, so you should do this, and this is what John did, so it'd be good if you put, it was pick up the script and see what happens. And then there's different factors, because you know the show is up and running, so there's certain tech elements that you have to match up with, but it was never the case of being a carbon copy, which I admire and respect. And when I've spoken to Jonathan, the director, he's always said, you're never gonna arrive, you're never gonna feel like you've done a perfect show, because this show is always changing and it's always transforming because of the people. And because this is a play about people and about a community, it's reliant on the actors in the show and the actors in the piece. So it would be, I think, quite toxic for this piece if we were to be carbon copies of anyone else.
It would lose the heart, I think. And yeah, I think it's, for me anyway, when I joined the company, I felt like it was so refreshing to be told, like, you bring Heba to this, you know, you bring your experiences and how you are to this character. And I think all of us felt that. I think we all felt like we weren't stepping into someone else's shoes. We were creating our own shoes and, you know, molding them to fit us. And like Noah said, there are, you know, technical elements where, like, for example, I have a scene on a bed and I have to, like, exit on the bed. So I can't suddenly decide that I'm going to surf the bed. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I actually want to walk off.
But, like, so, like, in terms of, like, the technical aspects, like, that is... We have to do those things. But in terms of... bringing our own experiences and our own kind of, I like to say, flavor to the characters. Like, we definitely worked on our friendship and our chemistry together and figured out our history together. And that, even that was a luxury. We had that day where we've figured out how we became friends and how we know each other. Yeah.
And,
you know.
And it was, you know, when you look on the schedule and it just sort of said, like, read through of scenes. Baby did that in the last 15 minutes of like the 2-hour session, because we just sat and chatted. We're like, well, we think that Jamie and Pretty did this, and like when they were younger they were doing this, and like it's the important stuff that, you know, the audience
hopefully can see.
They'll hopefully see it, but it's that thing that they'll never know, but we know it. You see that connection and that friendship. And I think what was important is that obviously we were a part of a sort of a small number of people that were swapping out, so there were sort of like 10 of us rehearsing at once. And what was nice is that we were able to create our own sort of vibe and energy, and it was really helpful to have the people that we did, because we had Jordan, who's a new Dean, we had Zion, who's a new Levi, so they're sort of on with us all the time. But then we had Joe and Ebony, who are on new swings, who are incredible, and the brains I just can't deal.
Yeah.
But it was nice to have them playing multiple people, and them, you know, Ebony finding her Vicky and her Bex, and Joe finding his Mickey and his Saeed. You know, like it's different. It was like it was a nice process to have. And even with the technical elements, it's like you're saying, like, there's certain things we have to maintain, but it was never about, even in that, it was never about doing it the same as someone else's. It was about finding it organically for your own means, because if you've got to, like, I've got to hit the wall and the wall lights up, but I'm not going to do that just because someone's like hit the wall, because then that's robotic, and that's not coming from a thought, it's not coming from an intention, it's just coming from Noah's been told to hit the wall. And I think what was nice is that it's never been a pressurized thing either. Like, when there's moments that weren't working, I remember the first time we did the beautiful scene, and it was at the end of a really long day and we were all really tired, and it was just me, Heber and George, our director, and we were just like, it's not today, is it? It's not. And there was no pressure in to be like on it, or to like why is this not happening today, guys? Mm. There's none of that, because it's unhelpful to this particular process.
But and that's the best thing about live theatre, I think, and why I love doing it so much, is that even from, you know, doing the show now for, I guess, about a month, no show is the same. And like Johnny Butterill said, it's a clean slate every time we step on that stage, and this audience are seeing the show for the first time, and we're telling this story for the first time. So for us to try and replicate something that has been done before is unhelpful, because they've not seen what's been done before, and it's hard to put that pressure on yourself in that way. We can only tell the story, we can only say these words for the first time in that moment. And so to have that relationship and the backstory already created, then that other element is something that we can explore every show, and it's never a finished product. Like, perfection is unattainable. You have to keep striving for it, and keep, you know, trying to say these things, and, you know, create these relationships every day for the first time. So I think that's what's most exciting about stepping into these characters. Yes, people have played them before, but some people are watching the show for the first time, and it's our job to tell that story.
A lot of people are as well, and that's the exciting thing, is that, you know, it's considered long running at the minute because it's been open for a while, but it is, for a lot of people's coming over to see it, it's their first time, and that's really special that we can be their first Jamie and their first Pretty. That's a special thing.
And I do truly believe what you said earlier, what you touched on about how you saw yourself being represented, and I think all different people are going to watch the show and take all sorts of different things away from it, because characters are being represented that are normally represented, but also a story is being told that we don't normally see in this kind of way.
Definitely.
And different people can take that away in all different levels, and how amazing that a show like this is now, like, long running, yeah. and also touring the UK, yeah. and I'm sure it's going to go...
And internationally.
It's going to go all over the world, which is really, really important for theatre, because sometimes a show that kind of represents different people, does different things, will always have an amazing response, but maybe it will, something like that will run for like 6 months or a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just so happy that a show like this has run for so long and is doing so well. So tell me about, I mean, you're only a month into your run, but what are some of the kind of reactions you've had, like from people at stage door and from fans? Because I know like you must get insane responses from people.
I mean, like, I'm sure Noah will agree. Like, it's overwhelming. Like, I think it's... For both of us, London is our hometown, and we've grown up in London. And
shout
like,
out to London.
I know, shout and it's you know, London. It's Come always on. Been a dream to play a West End theatre. Like the West End is
because
like,
people don't realise this is your first.
It's
West
my
End
first
show.
West End.
You
contract.
Have done everything, and I've seen you in like so many different things, and you've played
my
internationally.
Girl. My girl has been booked
several,
and blessed since
several
the age
different
of 21.
Continents, like
I mean, Australia,
Disney princesses. You work at Sonic Playhouse, but this is your first West End show.
Yeah, and so like. It like nothing compares to like making your West End debut. I think I've done some, like you said, some incredible contracts, and the fans from those other shows have been incredible and so amazing. And you know, even like as a Londoner playing the National is like insane. Yeah. And like, but a West End contract is something that is like, I don't think you can explain it to someone when it's something that you've dreamed of your whole life as a Londoner. And you go see shows, like I've gone to see shows since the age of like 4, like watching, you know, Beauty and the Beast at the Dominion or Lion King, and just being like, I want to be that person. I want to be on that stage and be that representative for the little girls out there and the little boys and whoever, you know, that one that sees themselves in these characters. And I think going to stage door and seeing the, I want to say versatility of the people that come to see this show and the people that relate to Pretty is amazing. And I think it's not necessarily all the people that you'd expect that see themselves in this character, but she's a smart, fierce, fiery Muslim girl that is
feminist.
And stands up for what she believes in. And I think just that, like in itself, going to stage door and seeing older men and younger teenage girls and, you know, people that say, wow, what an amazing thing that you're able to play this character who isn't, you know, just a stereotypical character. She's someone who is opinionated and has views and is a representative of this religion that is, you know, amazing. And I think that in itself has been a kind of a, like, I don't think I'm going to forget that anytime soon. I think it's been so amazing.
And what I think the key part of it as well is that it's a difficult one with representation, because you often feel like we should be able to play anyone and everything, and I agree with that, and I do, but I think the amazing thing about this show is that the people behind it have the bravery to put those characters on stage first and foremost. So even though it's amazing that we can have, you know, the first black actress to play Glinda or the first Asian actress to play Elsa, we can have all these things. It's amazing that we can just do that from the go and just have a Muslim character, just have Jamie be someone non-white, and it just be that way it is. That's an amazing
thing. It's the
writing.
I think it's testament
the
writing. To the writing.
And the bravery of the producers and of the creatives, because it's not colorblind. This show is not colorblind. It's essentially like, I don't want to say like, it sounds quite wanky, but like color brave. Mm-hmm. Like it's brave in taking that step and not being afraid to put a Muslim girl as the female lead of a show. Like that's never happened before. And then that builds the courage for someone like Hiba, who is Muslim, to come and play these roles. Do you know what I mean? Rather than it having to always be, we're stepping into this. And the other important thing in this show is that no one is a token. There's no tokens in this show. She just happens to be Muslim. I happen to be mixed race. That's just the way it is.
I think it's reflective of society.
Of the world
we
live in, yeah.
I think for me, and I think probably Noah will agree with me with this, it's, I think, the most diverse show on the West End at the moment. And it reflects our society. It reflects London. It reflects the UK. And it's hopefully what I'd like to think of as an ideal. You know, by the end of the show, people's opinions and people's thoughts towards all of these characters change, and they see human beings at the end of the day. You know, like, we're not defined by a religion or a sexuality or, you know, what you see yourself as. You're defined by the person you are and the traits that you have. So hopefully that's the message people take from coming to watch the show,
yeah.
is that don't judge a book by its cover, really. Yeah. Like, we are all three-dimensional
yeah.
human beings.
And that's what the response has been, is that it's yeah. been so overwhelmingly positive because of all those elements, and because, you know, like, not to mention that this entire cast is, like, everyone on this stage is phenomenally talented. Mm. Like, that's a given. But it's the fact that everyone's doing it with such truth mm. and such a genuine care for the show. That's that's mm. where it's key, mm. rather than it being a thing of anyone's just coming because it's work. It's more than that mm. to the people here. It's community. It's mm. And it's at the point now where, because the show's been running so long, it's not for us. You know, we love doing it and we feel great, but it's for those people. It's for those people that feel marginalized and underrepresented. It's for everyone. And so to see young kids come who, like, I think the first night I had a girl come mm. to me when she was with her mum, and she was about 16. And she said to me, she was like, I used to do performing and I used to love it, but I've just like, I don't know, I just don't think I can do it. And I was like, girl, if I can do it, if little Noah from South London, who doesn't come from money, who doesn't come from any kind of beneficial mm-hmm. preferential treatment, can do mm-hmm. it, you can do it, sis. Just work hard. Like, I didn't think I'd be, you know, be like, this would be my job. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just not a thing I would ever foresee. Mm-hmm. So I literally, anytime someone's like, I wish I could perform, I'm like, girl,
you can
look at me. I can do it. You can do it. We can all do it. And there's, you know,
it's not easy.
It's
and
not.
If it was, then everyone would want to do it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but there's, but I always say there's room at the top for everyone.
Absolutely.
And I refuse to believe that there's this exclusivity thing that only certain people of a certain privilege can make it. It's like anyone can do anything if they put their mind to it.
Definitely.
And everything you just said is the reason why I'm so proud of someone from the theatre industry, that this is a show that's like a new British musical
yes.
that is representing British theatre
yeah.
and sort of needed
yeah.
for
100%.
A while, I think, something like this to come along. And I went to New York last year, and in the stagey shop, the music was playing and the guy was talking to me about it and asked
yeah.
me questions, and now it's on tour. And it's a regional story, so it's going to speak to all those people as well. I want to talk about vocals, because obviously, this, as you said, the score is incredible. And then we have like Heber giving it full out, belting for Jay's. And then, no, obviously, like, doing your own thing and like also letting loose on that score. Like, it is. I was here on media night, and I was actually sat a couple of seats away from Luke Baer. And Luke
probably
was
crying,
like,
his eyes
he
out.
Luke could not sit still during those musical numbers, and I couldn't sit still either. So talk to me about taking on these songs and letting loose on some of these vocals.
The struggle is real. No,
it's
for you.
It's a challenging thing, but I think the thing it was with the singing for me is that that's the thing I wanted to master first, because I knew it'd be the biggest challenge for me, because I felt like I'd done enough research that, like, I knew who Jamie was. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I know who he is. Not completely or entirely. I don't think I'll ever will, but to the point where I was like, I need to focus on the singing. And the honest to God truth is that, like, I still am figuring it out. Like, that, like, only this week I was like, guys, I've cracked that first number now. I've done it. Did it the next day, and I was like, nope, square one. Because it's the whole...
He says square one, but it's still very, very good.
your square one compared to some other people's
exactly.
square one, it's probably a very
exactly.
different place.
But yeah, but then it's also, like, messing with my perfectionist head, and that I want everything to sound great and to feel great, and it's a lot of things. But yeah, tackling the songs has been fun, and it's again the freedom to be able to experiment and play and find it in my voice, because it's a weird technical conundrum of Jamie's speaking voice is quite high, my natural speaking voice is quite low, and then singing, the range that's required to sing it is here, there and everywhere. So it's, where do you place your voice? And it's just a lot of vocal rest, a lot of steaming, a lot of sleep.
What's the hardest bit of the score? What's the, like, the most what are you, like, relieved when you get out of the way?
Do you know what, it's just the fact that I'm sat at the start of the show facing the back and this whole scene's going on and I'm just like, I know I've got to sing, don't even know it, in about 3 minutes. And it's the biggest marathon of my life. But to be fair, that one, once you're in the flow of it, it's quite nice. Mm. All of that one, to be fair, is lovely. It's singing, being honest, limited edition is the hardest song for me to sing, just because it's stamina wise it's actually the trickiest out of all of them, Misconception. And I'm also in a very tight belted dress, so there's no release, like there's no breathing there, so it's all like, fingers crossed it comes out, come on now, quick short breaths. But yeah, that and Ugly are probably the two hardest songs to sing, I think. Ugly just because of
the moment in the show,
the thoughts it comes from, but then also it is just consistently higher in the range, which, you know, is inevitable because I've heard the songs before, but like every night I do get to it and I'm like, here we go. Give it. And so you just have to be prepared, and you know, I do my own warm-up. I do the warm-up we have to do all together just to be the most prepared that I can be. But it's just about pacing yourself and looking after your voice as well. And, you know, when you have your days free, do things that don't require you to talk, like go to the cinema and go to the theatre and read and listen to music and just don't talk. Basically, that's how I've looked after my voice, is just not talking during the day. This is lovely, though, because I love getting your voice going.
Warming up.
Yeah, it does, especially because, you know, we're sort of, when you're in a show, you're kind of running on a different body clock to everyone else. So, like, my mum gets up at 5:30 every day to go to work, and oof, as if she's seen me in the last, like, month awake at any time before 9 o'clock. It's just not happening, because you need enough sleep. You know, it's the only way your voice is gonna get back to what it was. And it's in every week kind of balanced. Like 2 weeks ago, my voice was absolutely shattered, like it was just tired every day and there was nothing I could do about it. But I had my Sunday off, came back on Monday, and I was like, guys, we're back. We're back today. But yeah, no, it's amazing to sing these songs as well, because it is musically, the songs are brilliant, because they are fighting the idea that just because it's a musical, the songs have to be in a musical theatre traditional style. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, when we were learning our songs, it was a lot about how do we make it more pop? How do we make it more rhythmic? How do we make it more percussive? And it's the fact that every character has their own sort of sound. So Jamie's is very percussive and very electric. It's very Michael Jackson, Bruno Mars, Pharrellish vibes. And then Pretty's is sort of more acoustic, a bit more, you know, has a bit more of a ballady kind of feel. Whereas like Ray's is like straight funk with limited edition. Margaret has probably the most musical theatre moments.
And kills everyone in the audience.
Melissa
is incredible.
Melissa is amazing.
Well, superhuman, incredible is not a good enough word.
She is superhuman. But also,
like, every night as well.
Every night she sounds that fleeky. Yeah. But also, this is the thing. I love He's My Boy, but Met Myself Again is my favourite song in the show. It's my favourite song.
And her voice, it sits so beautifully. Those low notes. It's low.
I just want to just clarify for everyone who's listening to this.
Yeah,
Melissa is like that every night.
Every night without fail.
She is a
machine.
Her voice is incredible. She can sing anything. I want an album, I'm just saying.
Yeah, album, concert,
all of it.
See that?
I want the Heba El Sheikh album, and I listen to her sing every day. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just. And she came back the first, let me tell you, Wednesday. Heba came back from holiday. My girl was giving it extra riffs. My girl was giving it this. And I was
with the jet lag,
and I was sat there listening to her, and I was like, Heba, stop it now, because it's a competition, is it? I'll have to bring out something little cute in one.
He always does, though. The other day, in the end of the show, which is obviously when he can actually like let rip and like get every without
but also
giving
when
too
I'm
much
the most
away.
Tired.
But also, he knows that he hasn't got any more songs to sing, so he can fully just go for it. The other day, he added this extra thing, and I always listen as well, because obviously.
That's what we are.
So I was listening and I was like, oh my God, because I clapped on the wrong moment because I was too busy looking at what he was doing. And I was like, I am so angry at you right now. I was like, I didn't need that extra riff from you, because
just putting in a little top C for the Saturday night.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
So nice.
He would tell me about your riffs. Tell me about the score for you.
I mean, for me, I feel very lucky because This is probably one of the lowest shows that I've done.
My girl was
Brooklyn.
My girl was Brooklyn.
I mean, so, and even Jasmine was very like soprano. So I think for me, this show is all about the acting. Mm-hmm. It's all about the scenes and being as truthful as possible to this character. And even the way I approached this show was very different to how I approached other shows. It was very much about like just trying to do this character justice and telling her story. I love singing the songs. I think the songs are so, pun intended, beautiful.
You have moments as well, though, like in Etage.
She has
a big belty moment in Everybody's Talking About Jamie. Just comes out of nowhere and everyone's like, all right,
he does. That's the bit. It's like start of act two and you're not prepared.
No,
do you know what? I guess if that is, I think that is probably the bit that I think about the most in terms of vocals because I have to pick the note out of nowhere.
Out of the sky.
And for me, I think that's the only moment that I'm like, I just, come on, Heva, just make sure that this is in the right key. And because as soon as I hit that first note, I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be fine. It is in the right, like, so,
yeah.
So that technically that moment is probably the hardest and the beautiful reprise after Jamie leaves because we have a whole scene.
You have so many of those and then I just have to pick the note out of the sky. Yeah. But even at the start of Spotlight as well, like sometimes there's a little instrumental moment where there's a little picture, but sometimes often Richard, who's our main conductor, don't give that note. And so my girl, he was like, will you dress? Fingers crossed. Because the party is just, it's tricky.
I think Pretty has probably the most moments in the show where she just has to pick the note out of nowhere.
I have none.
For 2 seconds, so can we just talk about Brooklyn? Can we talk about Once Upon a Time?
Can we talk about
how you deal with the like pressure of having to sing that
knowing
song?
That the end is coming?
Do you know what? I was obsessed with that music for a very long time. And I think a lot of people that trained in musical theatre, do you know what I mean?
I didn't train in musical theatre, I was obsessed,
People were obsessed with that score because similar to Jamie, actually, it was kind of like the first musical of its time that had like that kind of iconic pop and integrated musical theatre. Mm-hmm. And so people that didn't necessarily come from a musical theatre background could listen to that as an album and be like, whoa, this is amazing. And the same with this musical.
Yeah.
And so singing Once Upon a Time, and I think a lot of people didn't know that it came so early in the show.
It's so early in the show.
Yes, it was like, I think the second song or something.
Yeah.
But for me, kind of similar to Know It after Don't Even Know It, when that number was done, I could kind of breathe. Yeah. Even though the rest of the show was ridiculously high and it was like rock pop anthems the whole time, I loved every second of it. And so
I love Heart Behind These Hands. Yeah. I sung that for an ensemble project at Brit.
Yeah.
That song is gorgeous.
It's so, the whole score of, and you know what, I'm kind of gutted that it wasn't a longer run because I loved that show so much. And yeah, I would have loved to have done like an cast album of it or something. Because
on press night, oh my God, that's what we need. Yeah, let's start that campaign. Album. But I was just on press and I, that last note was like the audience just kind of collectively just stopped breathing for about 30 seconds.
Oh my gosh. I mean, God, I loved it. I loved every second of it. And like, I've been so lucky. I genuinely feel like I'm just like, I've been very, very lucky in terms of the casts I've worked with. You. Have been incredible. Like, I think, you know, every show that I've worked on, luckily, I've been super, super lucky that the company that surrounds you is always incredible. And I think, you know, having that camaraderie with your fellow actors is always like what lifts the show, I think. And for me, like that show was such a dream. Genuinely, it really was. And I sang that song for every single audition, I can even tell you, because it was, and I sang it to my Brooklyn audition because I was like, you need to cast me. I was like,
right,
this is my dream.
Now,
but I literally, they were like, what have you prepared? I was like, Once Upon a Time from Brooklyn. Because I was like, because I wanted it. I really wanted it. And I think I've been so lucky to get to, you know, represent so many different, like, I was the first Arab actress to play Jasmine, and you know, I'm the first Muslim actress to play Pretty. And I think for me, those are kind of tick box moments that, like, I want to be able to do, and I want to be able to be like, guys, look, you can play these roles. And to play a role like Brooklyn that isn't defined by any of those things, isn't defined by the color of my skin, my heritage, anything, and just to be a character and get to sing those epic songs was a blessing, like that's a true, true blessing.
That's the same with Jamie. The only thing about Jamie is I have to be blonde. That's
And here he is.
How do you feel about the blonde?
Not like, I wasn't like, I was just apprehensive because I've never touched my brown hair before. Like, it's just, I've been brown from the moment I was born till about 4 months ago. Yeah. So it was funny. It was just a funny sort of week. The week I got it done, I just sort of was like looking at it, being like, this is
I loved it. As soon as you got it done, I was like,
and luckily everyone's loved it so far. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm at the minute, it changes like day to day, but at the minute I'm like, I can't wait to be brown again.
Oh,
but
I love it.
I love the blonde for now because it's like a little stint. It's like fun. It's cool.
And I think it's the iconic Jamie hair.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Like, as soon as you see those posters with the blonde hair, the red lip, that you're like, there he is. And yeah. I think, well, for you now, it's like, there he is, there's Jamie. Yeah, it's like, you know.
I can't walk around Tooting anymore because the posters are all over the tube. It's really, really like.
Papped. He's getting papped.
Guys, he's not doing pictures today. He's not. No, it's just a bit weird because like I'm like bus tube whatever, but like it's the fact that you look like I was stood on my tube platform the other day and I was just looking on my phone, you know, selecting my Pussycat Dolls playlist because they've come out with a new music, and so I put the playlist on and I look up and I was like, oh, for
that's me.
God's sake! Like it was the poster with all the drags. I was just like. If
poster.
Anyone says anything right now, I'm gonna die.
But I like to. One of my favourite things to do now, which Noah obviously loves, is when we're out, to be like, "Who's that?" and point at the pictures of him, or make him walk past it subtly, and then take video footage.
We did that when we went and saw Anne Juliet on the way back. There's like a poster, massive poster on Chelsea Avenue. And I was just like, oh, no.
So I made him take a picture of him.
So she made me take a picture of him. But, you know, it's just taking some adjusting too. Because
but I think you've got to savour these moments. Like,
yeah,
I think
you don't know when that's
going to
happen again.
Exactly. So and you want to be able to show whoever in the future, like...
And a lot of shows with, well, that's the thing with a lot of shows is that a lot of the images now are like conceptual images and it's not a lot of faces anymore. And so it's the fact that it is my face, I think it's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe we've come to the end almost. I feel like I've just arrived.
No,
I've
not.
Asked that one question.
Next question.
You have a show to go into.
Yes, whatever.
Noah needs his own podcast, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've already said this.
The Jamie sessions, or like, I don't know, you have a different like cast member each week. I want to paint the picture. That's what we should have done earlier because the people can't see.
Oh, shall I describe
it? It's literally like a flat that I feel like I've walked into. You're very much at home.
I am. So the theme of this room is mustard and plants. So all of the decor. So you're currently sat on my mustard cushion, which Heba got me from H&M Home. All my towels are mustard. And then the rug is mustard as well, which came with the room, which is lovely. Thank you, Jo Miles. The bin is yellow. And then I think, I don't know, something about plants is very calming and very like centering. So I have a garden, a mini garden. It's actually in an Adidas box,
which is the best bit.
Which all my Ivy Park stuff came in, which we, Beyonce, we stan. But it's in an Ivy Park box. It's in the cardboard box that came in because hashtag carbon footprint.
Yes.
And then I just got little succulents, or like there's one on my little shelf thing. There's one on my tea station. There's one on my little lamp here. I just like them everywhere. I just think they add.
You could literally just live here. You don't need to go home.
I do.
He does.
I live here. No, but
on a two-show day.
On a two-show day, you don't see me. But I think what's nice about it is that I don't know. I wanted this room to be like. I very much have like an open door policy as well. Like I just think if you want to come in and have a chat because I don't know. I think it's dependent on the piece and whatever. But I think if I'm playing a school kid and I need to have fun with other school kids, I'm like, guys, come in whenever. So okay. It's just an open door. I just wanted it to be a room
Who's
for everyone.
Who's in here the most?
Heba is in here the most all the time.
Every day.
To be fair, it's sort of all
and Zion,
the,
to be fair.
Zion, who plays Levi. And then, to be fair, Jay Rick.
Now he is this week.
Who plays Dean.
He's not a bully in
We
real
actually
life.
Get on. He does come in here a fair bit. And Tilly's in here a lot, who plays Fatima. So yeah, I just wanted to be in room for everyone. But I like mustard and plants, and that was
so
not the food, not the condiment.
And you also do have like a kind of a buffet going on as well.
I do. Yeah. So in the buffet, we've got all the free from snacks to avoid.
I've been offered tea. I've been offered dairy free Easter eggs.
Yeah, dairy free Easter eggs, brownies, biscuits, Sour Patch Kids, Oreos. Lindor,
just the essentials.
And then if you want, there's a few Sudoku books kicking about. There's National Geographic there if you want to have a read of it. There is, look.
We have podcasts and podcasts worth material.
I have. If you want to come back, we can do part two. And the fridge is bedazzled. I've got all the teas, all the vitamins, all the things. I feel very, very lucky. It's a nice room and it's sort of a nice sanctuary.
It's a lovely dressing room. It's a lovely dressing room.
So, yeah, and there's fake plants from Urban Outfitters all over the place as well. All the little leafy bits of it.
So Hiva's dressing room is just like...
Mine's pink.
Mine's pink.
Who because of? Michelle Visage.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yes.
I share with Sejal, who I was lucky to be friends with before I started the show.
She's a legend.
She is a legend. And honestly, like, the best to share a dressing room with and to be in a show with.
You two need, like, to sing a duet in something because your voices together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Sejal.
We've already planned it. Yeah. When she comes back from India with doing all of the dressing room sessions.
Sejal also, like... loves a bougie moment. So the dressing room is bougie.
It's pink. We've got a lovely tea station.
The kimono.
Both got kimonos.
I had to invest in a kimono because I was jealous. So you're currently sat next to my black sateen moment.
I feel privileged.
Yeah, so we do... Honestly, we spend more time at the theatre than we do at home. So, like, we have to make it kind of homely and have the most fun here. Because
It's nice. It's a nice place to sort of focus and, you know... I just keep looking at my costumes over there and like the madness of that. You just have to, you know, try to fight all the craziness of that and just be in the moment. But yeah, it's nice. I love this room.
Yeah.
So to summarise, Noah, you're going to start a podcast. He was going to do an album. And a duet with Sejal.
Yeah, I'll be on the album.
Yeah, featuring Noah.
Gladly be on the album.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been
the easiest podcast I have done in my entire life. I haven't done anything. You guys have done all the work.
Because we could chat for England. Yes,
give us an inch. We will take it.
Good luck with the rest of your run.
Thank you.
I know audiences are going to continue to go crazy.
Yeah, and go and see the film when it comes out. Yeah.
Go and see the tour, all of it. If you're in Japan, if you're in Australia, go see them
and
as well.
When it goes to Broadway, I will fight every actor to play Jamie on Broadway. Every single one.
Come on, world domination for Jamie.
Come on. Yeah, come and see us.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, darling. Thanks so much.
Everybody's Talking About Jamie is currently booking at the Apollo Theatre until Saturday, the 29th of August, 2020. Thank you so much to Noah and Heba for taking time out pre-show to talk to me. If you enjoy this episode of In The Frame, please leave a little rating and maybe even write a little review. Make sure you also check out our other podcast, The West End Frame Show, to stay up to date with everything going on in theatre land. And you can also find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. I'll be back next Friday with another amazing guest.